Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out of this chokehold. But it's no holds barred, middle fingers like I'm Stone Cold. What is up, y'all? We're back with another episode of the Slappin' Meat Wrestling Podcast. I'm Way Too Deep. And we are going to dive on in with another episode. We've been putting in some work with the content this week. We had the Tuesday episode. We had the normal Wednesday episode, which I didn't feel had, you know, was an in-depth, like, just me ranting type thing, right? It was more of a segment that I would typically do with, like, Wavy D, right? I just didn't have anything to really talk about in the fact that it was a quite literally a 8-hour turnaround from when I finished recording with Wavy D till I recorded the Wednesday episode, right? Also on Wednesday, I dropped, and I hope you guys have watched and enjoyed, the interview where I sat down with independent wrestler Vicious Vicky. And I just want to say, you know, I've gotten some good feedback from it from a couple people. I just want to say, just, you know, if she does watch this episode or tune in, you know, I've already said thank you enough, right, to her, but I just want to say it again, like, very professional. If a wrestling promoter on the indies sees this, like, I vouch for her as little as my word means in the industry. I vouch for her. She's really professional. And just, I enjoyed that conversation a lot more. Like, my experience with that, that's what I want to sort of start this episode with, is, just sort of explaining, like, the whole experience, right? And everything you saw on the video, I literally took the video as it recorded on Zoom and put it in iMovie in between the intro and the outro, right? There was zero editing involved in that. And for several reasons, I do believe in, like, journalistic integrity. I was super nervous going into that. Like, typically, just you know, I've emailed other wrestlers to come on the show at various other times and have not ever received an answer back. So when I messaged her, I was like, you know, my thought in my head when I click send was, she's going to see this. She's going to look up the show. She's going to see we have 155 followers on YouTube, and that's it. And she's going to be like, no, there's nothing, no big reason for me to ever go on this show, right? And for me, like, I was fully expecting to just not even get a response, because that's typically what has happened whenever I tried to bring someone on the show, right? It would either be no response, or the major factor, you know, there are other things where, like, there will be, like, typically no response is typically what I'm used to. And so the fact that I even got a response, to me was big, right? Because she responded, hey, I would love to come on, right? I put out a little feeler episode, or, like, feeler email that was like, hey, you know, would you be interested? Here's what I would like to talk about. Here's a little bit about the show. And fully expecting no answer, right? So I get a reply email from her. And that in and of itself, like, it could have said no, and I would have been like, you know what? At least I got a response, right? But she did say yes. And then so then I was like, you know, now we got to figure out a date. And we figured it out. And luckily I had a Wednesday off. Because Fridays, I'm assuming, would be tough for her, being that, you know, most indie shows are during the weekend, so she's either traveling or at a show on Fridays, right? So, you know, luckily I had a Wednesday where this week that worked with the schedule. And then, like, once we got that pat down, like, last Sunday, the Sunday that just passed, when we had the date and the time set, that's when it sort of like sat in, like, bro, like the nervousness of like, I don't want to misrepresent the podcast in and of itself, but I there's really a responsibility on me to make her marketable. And I take that very seriously. I do. It's part of the reason why I don't do a lot of interviews is because there is a responsibility on the journalist. And I use that term very loosely because I'm not a journalist. But when you're doing an interview, you have a responsibility to make sure that the way you present the content in the interview is representative to the actual discussion you have. And we see this in the news and broadcasting and stuff like that all the time, documentaries and stuff, where they do these interviews and then they get chopped up and edited into the show, and it completely changes the context of what it said, right? And so I was nervous that, you know, I wanted to make sure I asked questions that weren't repetitive, that she could answer on any other that would be very unique content to this show that would draw people here. But also at the same time, just sort of like, I knew I wouldn't like misrepresent what she said because I never planned on editing because I don't edit anything. Excuse me. And so I was real, you know, nervous about the questions I asked. I'm socially awkward when I first get to meet somebody, right? And I'm starting to come out of that shell. And so I was real nervous that I would come off like awkward in the conversation. And I think, you know, I thought it went very well, right? I enjoyed it. It was a very, very good, you know, like 23 minute conversation, about, you know, just getting to know her. And it really, you know, has awakened this like desire to do, you know, do short form interviews like that. I have no desire to do hour long interviews with anybody whatsoever. but I don't want to do it for like big wrestlers, right? So if an independent wrestler sees this, and you're just getting started, or you're years into your career, and you're just not getting that momentum to get you over the hump, right? I don't want someone that's, you know, that wrestles, you know, all the time. Like, I don't want a Matt Cardona or a, you know, someone on that level. I want the newbies, the people who are getting into wrestling. I want the people who've maybe been in it for 10, 15 years and aspire for it, you know, maybe haven't gotten that big push towards, you know, the ultimate goal. I want to know your story, right? Because some takeaways I took away from this interview, right? And I spent like all day Tuesday prepping for this with these questions, and the takeaway that I got from this, right? Because I had zero clue with how this conversation was going to go out. I didn't know what her answers were going to be, right? And so I knew that I respected her decision. I was going to really put that on, like, on her, and I thought I did a good job of saying, no, I respect your decision, and, you know, just sort of getting to know Vicious Vicky as a person and as a she's the reason I love independent wrestling, right? She's the reason I love the indies, is because this is a woman who, you know, 7 years ago had a WWE tryout and was on the precipice of possibly being signed to WWE through NXT, through the Performance Center, right? And she had that moment. And it didn't happen. And then COVID happened. And the world shut down. People stopped going to events and people stopped traveling. And like, just like she mentioned, it sort of became the territory days. And I know personally several independent companies who never, you know, were running shows before COVID hit, had to stop running shows. COVID's over, can't run shows no more because there's no money. Right. And that's why I asked the question, what kept you going? And I'm so glad, because I didn't know that about her, that COVID was part, you know, that she basically had to re-pick up her career after COVID. Like, that wasn't even, I didn't even know that, right? Because I was just going to ask the question, you know, you're 7-8 years on the indies. Why do you keep doing this? You know, what keeps you going in that? The direction I wanted that question to go in was, hey, the life on the indies is hard. What keeps you going through it? And it sort of turned into, well, what kept you going through the hard times of having to reinvent yourself, because you came back from COVID and there was a new younger batch and a new, you know, younger, hotter, more talented, more athletic, possibly, right? And that's why I asked that question. And what I learned, there were two takeaways I got from that whole interview process. First off, she is the definition of professional. Just from her responses to being on time. Like, I value being on time. If we set an interview time for, you know, we did 2 p.m., right? If I set that 2 p.m. time, you know, I'm not expecting you to get there at 1:30, even though I got there to make sure all the technology was working at 1:30, right? But that's on me to make sure my interview was right. I didn't expect her to get there at 1:30. But if it was like, and I sat there and I was like, there were part of me that was like, she's going to be late or she's not going to show up. And that's just the voice in the back of my head saying, you know, that's always negative. And she showed up on time, early, like 5 minutes early, which is fantastic for me. Like, that's professional to me. She had no reason to have to be on my show, but she acted professional. For that and that alone, I vowed for her. But the second thing I took away about her, and about, she loves this business. And it's more than a business to her. It's a dream. It's a passion. It's something that, you know, just like she said, from when she was sick, you know, 5-6 years old, this is what she's always wanted to do. And she didn't go to college, and she went to wrestling school. Like I didn't exactly go that path, but I quit college, right? I personally quit college, giving up the one thing that I really wanted to do since I was in middle school, which was teaching and coaching, right? Gave that up. But I understand, you know, how hard it can be to give up, you know, having that college education. But I just, oh boy, like, I came out of that interview with a newfound respect for her as a performer. And then, like, she's been posting. So I'll end it with this, because it's been kind of long on this topic. I'll end it with this. Over the last week, she's posted 2 promo vignettes, right? So I do this for a reason. Every Friday episode now is going to have an indie spotlight. It may not be like an interview, but it's going to be me, like, you know, spotlighting certain independent wrestlers that I think you guys should you know, and it's going to be hard for me to find them because I'm not really in this cycle. But independent wrestlers that I think you guys should look into if they're in your area, right? And so we'll say unofficially she's the first one. And so in the last week, she's clearly trying, you know, her goal, you know, she's put on posts, as even said in the interview, her goal for 2025 is to put pen to paper by the end of the year. And I will say this, I 100% believe that whether it's TNA, whether it's AEW, whether it's WWE through a developmental system, one of those three needs to put pen to paper with her, because she's professional. She's good in the ring. But she has a desire to get better, and that's the first thing I would look for. She's professional. She loves the business. She has a passion. She's confident, but humble, right? There's a difference between being confident and cocky. I got confidence out of her statement, not cockiness, right? And so But let me tell you something. She released a promo this afternoon. She's repackaging, she's rebranding, which is perfectly fine. It's what wrestlers on the indies need to do to try to get over, right? And 100% I like the new branding. But this promo, let me tell you something. There's one thing, in my opinion, one thing. The number one thing, the most important thing you need to have in this business, in wrestling, is the ability to make people feel emotion and to care. We see that in Jey Uso. The fans care. He elicits an emotional response every time he's on the screen. Let me tell you something. This promo that Vicky put out on her socials, you can find it on Instagram. You can find it on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, right? I think it's on her YouTube as well. I haven't checked, but I'm sure it is. This promo she put out today. Yo, let me tell you something. I felt every single word of that. Every single word of that promo elicited some sort of response. It made me care, right, about what she was saying. There's no feud involved. This was just her promoting herself. And all the struggles and the trials and the setbacks that she's gone through in her life and in her career. And she put you, the listener, in her shoes, and it made you feel what she felt. And I left that video, I left that promo saying, why is she not signed? Because it was one of the best promos I've ever heard from an independent wrestler, right? Right, one of the best that I've ever heard from an independent wrestler that hasn't had, like, actual TV training. Like, Matt Cardona gives really good promos because he's TV trained, right? And so from someone who's never been truly TV trained, she's got it. She's got it. And yeah, she's gone up a couple rungs in the last week, and how I view from being a complete nobody to me, because she is in the New Jersey market, right? Being a complete nobody to me, to someone that if someone were to ask me, if a promoter were to come to me and be like, hey, name any independent wrestler in the world right now, who would you want to see at a show, right? If my local company, AML, said you can have anybody show up and we'll get them, who would it be? And my answer would right now, at this current moment, would be her, because she's got it. She needs to be on a big stage at some point this year. You know, AML, get her at a WrestleCon. You know, there's going to be how many independent shows in Vegas? Someone put her on a card, right? If you live in the Midwest, she has a show out in March, I think it's the 22nd, she makes a debut out in the Midwest. All that's on her. I can't say enough about her, but that's enough. That's enough of that. That's my experience though, right? The best experience, most professional experience I've ever had dealing with an independent wrestler. And so honestly, I appreciate that. I really do. But let's come into sort of the reason I'm doing an extra episode this week is there's so much more that I never got to on Wednesday. And there's a reason for that. One, I just didn't have time to plan and think about what I wanted to do. But two, I didn't want to risk being in the middle of recording the Friday episode in the morning and having like it go long to where I then have to stop everything, do this interview, and now I don't get any episode up or anything like that, right? So I wanted to keep that Wednesday episode kind of small, and then the idea came to me, let's go over, I got seven topics that I want to talk about real quick. So the first one is, I've already seen people, whether it is CWC or IWC, Internet Wrestling Community, hardcore, casual fans, I've already seen a mixture of all of it start to sort of like complain about this Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, a feud that's about to pick up and probably will be the WrestleMania match. And I don't quite understand what the negativity is to this potential match. We know it's going to work. We know it's going to be magic when we get it in the ring. But there's also a different dynamic to this go-around of this story. But I also don't understand. In cinema, all the time, you have a good guy have an arch nemesis, and they meet in movie one. Movie two happens, they don't meet. And movie three, they find each other again, right? If we want to use like a sports reference, this is Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning. This is LeBron James versus Steph Curry in the finals like 3 years in a row. This is Pat Mahomes versus Josh Allen, which seemed to always end up being the AFC championship game year in and year out, right? And how many times do we get annoyed when those happen? We don't. We cheer for the matchups because it's the big rivalry of the sport, right? Anytime Peyton Manning and Tom Brady faced off against each other, whether it was Patriots, Colts, or Patriots, Broncos, there was a big, like, I hate the Colts with a burning passion solely because of the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady rivalry. Don't really necessarily have that same hatred for the Broncos. But like I to this day, I despise the Colts. Just do not care for them one iota. Because of that rivalry, right? And it elicits an emotional response. This story is going to elicit an emotional response. It's also the most logical of all booking decisions that we can have right now, right? Kevin Owens basically told Sami, "You either help me or face the consequences." And Sami didn't help Kevin. And he faced the consequences, right? So this is the most logical of all potential storylines that you could have here. And I know it's sort of, we've seen it before, but there's a whole different paradigm in the retelling of this story that I think is very good, right? So that's my first thought, is this is going to be a banger of a feud, a banger of a match. It's going to be very, very good on an already banger card. I can't imagine that this is just an Elimination Chamber match. I imagine that this goes further into WrestleMania as well. My next thing that I want to talk about, my next thought is Jey Uso is the guy. He is the top dog in the company right now, right? And so I know there's a lot of people in the casual community who don't see this happening. But the reality is Jey Uso should face Cody Rhodes. That is the reality, and I'm going to tell you why. Him versus Gunther is not a main event whatsoever. I also don't think that putting Jey Uso as the world heavyweight champion benefits him in the way that having him beat sort of Cody Rhodes is, and having this sort of paranoid Cody Rhodes who, you know, at the very end of the story, when he does lose the title and he can reflect on it, it could be because he became so paranoid that he made friends with enemies and enemies of friends, right? This part of the reason why, you know, Notorious Nerdy D is going to probably discuss on his podcast next week, the top five best Triple H PLEs since Triple H took over creative. And I mentioned Bad Blood, and you know, Wavy D is on this like anti Bad Blood thing where like, oh, there's only one match. And guys, I've said this since the pay-per-view or the PLE ended. It's not about the matches. It's about the storylines that pay-per-view and that or that PLE, that event is about the storylines that they set up. It was the starting point of Tiffany Stratton versus Nia Jax, like turning on Nia Jax and getting to the point to get us to Charlotte versus Tiffany, right? It was the starting point of Cody tagging with Roman essentially turning his back on Kevin Owens, starting the entire countdown to the feud between Kevin and Cody, right? So everything going on with Cody right now started at Bad Blood. The storylines themselves that came out of Bad Blood, in my opinion, makes this event one of the best that Triple H has done, but also one of the most important PLEs in terms of pushing storyline. Not every PLE is supposed to have set, you know, five banger matches. One banger match and a lot of story coming out of it is all that a mid PLEs should bring anyway, right? So I think Bad Blood accomplished what it needed to accomplish to get us to where we are in the storyline right now, right? Jey Uso's the guy, and he needs to take on Cody Rhodes. I think that's the best match you can have for him because, one, SmackDown needs some star power. If Roman's not going to be there, it needs some star power. And I think Jey Uso can be that star power. It also can then set up potential championship feuds between him and Priest, him and McIntyre, him and LA Knight, him and Kevin, him and Sammy, potentially down the line. But also, like, the story I've said this already, the story B-Master created where Jay beats Cody for the title and Roman immediately comes out and, like, well, you brought it back to the bloodline, now hand it over. And having that potential feud, that in and of itself, I think it's enough to say Jey Uso needs to face and beat Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. The next thing I want to talk about is down to NXT. Tony D'Angelo, our North American champion, makes his television debut on an episode of the show Wild Cards on the CW. First off, this show is actually really good, and I will be binge watching season one so I can catch up to what happened in season one because I didn't know there was a season one. So season two, episode one, Tony D'Angelo plays like, a bad guy who's like the head of a syndicate of criminals who do like a break it like an armored truck or something like that. And very good episode. Tony D is very natural, but this is the thing that I'm talking about because we can even talk about like Alexa Bliss signs with Paradigm, which is an agency. And it's an agency or it's representation to expand her career beyond the ring, right? And so this is what I'm talking about, what makes NXT and WWE as a whole so much more valuable of a place to be employed than AEW. If you are, or if you're getting in the industry and you want to be a wrestler and that's what you want to be, that's cool, right? But I think there are going to be people who come into WWE who even see WWE as a springboard into a career in acting. Like Tony D right now can say, I'm happy being on NXT, staying in Florida, working Tuesdays, not really having to travel much for house shows, only having to travel when we do big PLEs four times a year, showing up on TV, you know, once a week, if that, not even four weeks a month. Like, he shows up maybe two or three weeks in a month. If Tony D wants to do that and then focus on a career acting, I think WWE allows him that ability to do so. And it's not that AEW doesn't, because MJF's going to be in Happy Gilmore too. I know Samoa Joe is in a show. So it's not like AEW doesn't have, right? But AEW, I don't think, has people who can, you know, negotiate in a way to get, you know, because it's not the lower tier people. It's your big, it's your MJFs and your Samoa Joes, right? But Tony D'Angelo's in NXT, he's not even close to the top of the card on the roster, right? But he's getting TV shows, right? And he's exceptionally talented at acting, right? I knew from the storyline he ran where he was sort of like in jail with him and Stax that he had a career in acting, right? But this is the type of thing that I think makes signing with WWE super attractive, in that they can advance your career post-wrestling to where you could wrestle for 5-10 years, make a name out of yourself, transition into acting. And you have The Rock by your side. You have Nick Khan, who understands, you know, that world and being an agent, right? And so it's a very big deal, I think, when you, right? Which transitions to my next topic, that the fall of MJF needs to be studied, right? Mm-hmm. I say this all the time. Like, MJF is washed, right? MJF had us believing in 2023 that 2024 was going to be there was a bidding war, the bidding war of 2024, and he disappears in December of 2023. He shows back up in AEW with a tattoo on his leg of like AEW, some AEW stat or something, kind of cringy, and he's washed, dude. But I said this back in 2022, and maybe even earlier, that MJF's gimmick hasn't changed since the first time I saw him on the indies in 2018. My first ever indie show that I went to, MJF was at, and he was performing, and he played the same little cringy ass gimmick that he has now. And so in 7-8 years, nothing has changed with MJF. He hasn't really rebuilt himself. It appears that that the feud with him and Adam Cole was really feeling like he was trying to get into a different zone, and then he goes back to the same gimmick. And now he's fighting, you know, 60-year-olds. The last two feuds have been Jeff Jarrett and now Dustin Rhodes. And so, like, the fall-off of MJF needs to be studied for what not to do as a young pro wrestler with all the potential in the world. Because the dude went from being like the most sought after, like, potential WWE superstar to a guy that I don't like. He's literally mid-card AEW. And I don't know where that puts him in the world of pro wrestling. I don't find MJF all that appealing. I think he's, you know, very good at doing what he does, but I think that gimmick is so overexposed and washed that people, I don't think, really care about it anymore. At least I don't care about it anymore. There's nothing that MJF does now that excites me, where I used to be excited to see him on TV. Right now, he's just sort of there. So the next thing I want to talk about is, just real quick, is Roxanne Perez. I mentioned the Notorious Nerdy D in the Casual Wrestling Community show. Definitely go check that out. He had a take on Roxanne Perez, basically stating that she's very good at everything, but like she's a jack of all trades, but a specialist at none. Right? So she has a good look, both in terms of like her gimmick. That she has a good gimmick that she can play, but also she's attractive, right? And I think that's important in the industry that she's in, that she's attractive, and she's like an 8 out of 10 on in that category of a look, whether between the right, and she's really good in the ring, and she's like a 7 out of 10 in ring ability, right? Her promos are above average. Right, it took me a little while to get used to the heel promos, but she's very good at the sort of self-obsessed, like, this is my division, this is right. She's very good at that, but that's like a 7 out of 10. So she's very good at everything, but she's not spectacular. There's no 9 out of 10 category, right? Whereas I look at the rest of the NXT roster, even. And I see someone like Jada Parker, who has like a 9 out of 10 look, right? Men just oogle after her. And she's very good at her gimmick. And the ring work could use some help, but the promo ability is pretty good. But she has the look. And that's the 9 out of 10 that's the it factor that'll get her over. Sol Ruka, it's her athleticism, right? From the first time you see the Soul Snatcher, it quite literally snatches your attention to she has that it factor. It's the athleticism that puts Sol Ruka over. And then add on to the fact that she's attractive. She has a good gimmick. She's decent in the ring outside of the athleticism, but just her moveset in general is really good, and she has great timing, and her promo work is decent, right? But she has that it factor in that she's uber athletic, right? And you put someone like Roxanne Perez even on the mid card of the roster where you start to compare Roxanne to someone like Tatum Paxley. And Tatum Paxley's it factor is the gimmick and the look, right? It's unique. And you start to look at the women's roster on NXT and you start to think Roxanne's mid. And she's very good. And so we have people sort of like crowning Roxanne as like the future of women's wrestling. And she very well may be in creative's mind. But from a casual point of view, from someone who sort of understands that the things that the fans look at, what sets Jey Uso apart isn't the, you know, he has very good promo ability and very good charisma, but it's his ability to ooze and connect with and yeet and like that is what got him over. It isn't his in-ring work. He's very limited in-ring. I personally don't think his promo style has been all that good. He's now getting into a style that's good, but when he started being a singles wrestler, it wasn't good. And his in-ring work was, you know, a 6 out of 10. His promo work was a 6 out of 10. But what got Jey over was his charisma and his ability to get a phrase that's crazy and yeet and get that over, right, with the crowd. That is his it factor, and that's why he's the Royal Rumble winner and the top dog in the company right now, right? So it comes down to Roxanne Perez is good at everything, but great at nothing. And when I even compare it to like we just did with the NXT roster, now you throw in Charlotte and Becky and Bayley and Bianca and Rhea, like you already have 5 people on the main roster who are probably already better than you and have more fan recognition and name recognition than you from a casual point of view, like who is this person, right? And so Roxanne's good, and I would not hate one iota her being the future of the division. I just think they need to go back to the drawing board and find that one thing that sets her apart. Because right now it just feels like, Booker T's the one who trained her, and she's got the sign-off of Booker T and the wrestlers back. She's like the wrestler's wrestler, I think it's what Nerdy D called her. And I thoroughly agree with that assessment, that wrestlers love her because she's safe in the ring. She'll do the job when needs to be done, and she's good at that part, right? And then but someone who doesn't really pay attention to the X's and O's, who's more casual of an audience, and they're looking for that one it factor. I don't think she stands out enough to that audience. And so as they bring her to the main roster, they're going to have to find that one thing, right? She's going to have that, you know, I'm going to be completely honest. Roxanne Perez as a heel, I don't think will get over with the casual audience on the main roster. She's going to have to come in as this super babyface underdog who's small, like Rey Mysterio type storyline, right? And that's the way I think you can get her over. Two more things. The first is Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose said on her podcast that, I don't know if she's upset. I can't tell if she was joking or not, but basically, like, Tiffany Stratton said, put some damn respect on my name last Friday, and she went off on it, basically saying it's her phrase. And Mandy, just like, I don't really want to spend a lot of time on this because I don't think it's all that important. But Mandy chose, first off, you can't own a phrase if you don't copyright it. So, like, Mandy, if you wanted that to be your phrase, copyright it. But, like, you also, like, walk down. And I know there's a lot of casual fans who will hate me when I say this. Tiffany Stratton's already better than Mandy Rose was. She's more athletic. I think she's more likable. She's younger. Tiffany Stratton is the reason why I believe NXT and WWE were okay with Mandy Rose leaving, because they knew they had Tiffany Stratton in the back pocket. And I think Mandy Rose could have had a very good career going to the main roster. And she chose by her own priorities to do what she wanted to do, and that's on her, and she can live with that, and she's doing well for herself, so I'm happy for that. No hatred there at all. I don't think you can complain about someone using a phrase that is commonly used, right? I think it's crazy, right? But the last thing that I want to talk about is John Cena apparently is going to get a special PLE in December strictly for him in the city of Boston called Ruthless Aggression. And guys, this right here excites me. This is the very reason that I have John Cena winning Chamber, beating Gunther, losing the title around SummerSlam to someone like Bron Breakker, putting Bron Breakker over, then going and winning, you know, the IC title and giving up the IC title to someone like Carmelo Hayes, who is a Boston native as well. Like, all of this booking sort of leads to that. Right, this excites me, and at least WWE is thinking smart that Cena goes, you know, ends his career in Boston. And whether or not he wins that match at that PLE as his last match, that's debatable. We'll see where that goes. But I like this idea, and it leads exactly where I think it should be, which is John Cena should put someone over in his last match, and I think Cena's a man's man, a wrestler's wrestler. He wants to do good for the business. I really do believe that. And so I think he'll I'm conflicted though, because I having his last match be in his hometown, you kind of think he'll go over, right? And so part of me believes he should put someone over, but part of me also says this is the greatest wrestler to ever do it, and he should go out with his hands raised. I'll be interested in this. Interested to see how this goes, if this even materializes into something that's reality and not just rumor, and if it is reality, like how they end up booking this. So I'm very interested with that. but with that being said, I think I've gotten everything off my chest for the week. So I hope you guys enjoyed this, and have a great rest of your weekend. I'll see you back here with me and Wavy D on Tuesday as we talk about SmackDown Raw and all that, like same thing we always do every Tuesday. But until then, you guys have a great weekend, and I will see you on the next episode. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.